Good morning. Welcome into the Nuts. I'm Mike Palm, and he's Amal Shaw, back from Dallas after one day off. Josh Towers, old number seven, did a terrific job filling in, but it's good to have my buddy back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Amal, while you were gone, you were probably following either on the plane or in the airports or traveling there in the Metroplex. The big news in college football, the University of Texas, University of Oklahoma, headed to the SEC, it seems.
Yeah, I didn't know Texas still played football, but Oklahoma definitely paying attention to 0U and what they were doing, heading to the SEC. You know, I guess they don't want to go to the playoff and get waxed by Alabama. They want to do it in division, in season.
Well, they hope to, you know, they hope to be able to make the playoff without winning their conference, if they could be the second school out of the...
That's true.
To me, let's talk about just for these two schools what it means. To me, it's a strange move for Texas. Because
they're
barely relevant right now in the Big 12. Now, I know they have high hopes with Sarkisian coming in. They haven't won anything in a long, 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 long time. And now you're going to go to an SEC West or Super West. I don't know how they'll organize the conference. Where, what are you going to be, the fourth best team?
Well, I'll tell you what. If they end up moving Texas and Oklahoma, if this becomes official, you're going to see the end of college football, in my opinion, in terms of conferences. Because that's going to eliminate the Big 12. I mean, what do you got left in that league? Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas,
Baylor.
So it's going to be a real difficult situation for those teams, and they don't have great football programs. I'm just surprised that Texas wants to go into the SEC. They really should be able to dominate the Big 12. They should be what Clemson is in the ACC, and they haven't done that yet. So I'm really surprised by this. It appears, in my opinion, it's going to be an economic move, but they got to pay $76 million each to leave the Big 12.
Yeah, I don't understand the economics of it fully. I don't know what the Big 12 can do now, because what are they going to do? Bring in a couple schools from the, you know, are they going to bring in from the American Conference in terms of football, the competition level? You're going to bring in Cincinnati? You're going to bring in Memphis or something? It won't be the Big 12 anymore. Anyhow, I think this splits East and West probably, and you have the Big 10 try to pick up a couple teams. Maybe the Pac-12 tries to pick up a couple teams, and maybe the Mountain West.
Yeah, I'm really not sure what's going to happen. This is going to be interesting to see. You know, they're talking about this 12-team playoff. I agree with Dabo Swinney. I don't think they need 12 teams in the postseason. I've always thought the simplest solution would be an 8-team playoff. You take the five Power Five conference champions, one from the group of five, and then two at large. And if that's another team from the group of five or whatever else, you take them. And it's simple solution, 12. I mean, why don't we just make this like the NCAA tournament? We have a 68-team tournament now. We're trying to get everybody in.
Well, did you see Mike Leach at the SEC media days? He is proposing, and he's not joking about this, a 64-team college football playoff.
Yeah, they still wouldn't get it. I mean, the reality of it is with Mike Leach, I was surprised he was invited to SEC media days. That's why I was a little bit surprised when you said he commented on something. Based on the offense that they had, it was so offensive last year, the air raid, I didn't think they could get clearance to go anywhere.
What would you do? I mean, if a school had to win six games to win the title, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to have to split every conference in half and play four conference games. They're not giving up the out-of-conference. That's how they make their money.
That's exactly right. And also, the bigger programs, the Alabamas, Michigans, Ohio States, they want to have those three home games. Okay. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. But then again, I've come to realize that athletic directors re-sign guys like Charlie Weiss to contracts they don't deserve. So this doesn't really surprise me from a business decision-making standpoint.
When we look at the Big 12 this year, Oklahoma, your favorite at -450 to reach the championship game. Iowa State also a favorite to make it there, -140. Oklahoma, -180 to win the Big 12 title game. Iowa State at +$3. Texas is +$3 to make it there, $8 to win it. Your fourth choice is Oklahoma State, +360 to get there, and 11-1 to win it. You've commented that you think that Iowa State is not that far from Oklahoma right now.
Well, if you look at the last four games they've played, Oklahoma's won by 10 points once, and I think the others were seven or less. They've been able to cover spreads. They've been tight games. They don't obviously have the same talent. They don't have the same recruiting that Oklahoma does, but they've got terrific coaching in Matt Campbell. And I think that's the problem in college sports or in sports in general. If a coach doesn't win a championship, we don't necessarily consider him to be a great coach. You know, I use Rocky Long as an example, as a terrific coach who doesn't get enough credit because he's not going to win a national championship based on the programs he's at. And it's the same thing with Campbell. I think his team, Brock Purdy, back in the mix. This team's going to be extremely dangerous. They've got three games, Mike. Iowa at home in Ames. Texas, I think, is at home, and then they're down in Norman. Even if they lose the game in Norman, they'll get a potential rematch in Arlington.
I'm excited they're here in September to play UNLV. I want to see Iowa State play. I'll get a chance to do it right here in town.
Absolutely. It's going to be a good team, and I really believe their win total at 9 is a great over bet. They beat Iowa. I think they're going to run the table against the rest of the Big 12, minus Texas and OU.
I think they beat Iowa as well. I'm not convinced that Petras is the answer there for Kirk Ferentz.
He thinks it is.
This is the Nuts. I'm Mike Palm, and he's Amal Shaw. We're glad to have him back. In just 5 minutes, we're going to have Tom Hart from the SEC Network. He's worked for ESPN as well, but calls games, college football, college basketball, and to the terrific baseball that they play in the SEC. I want to talk to him about Al Leiterson and where he projects him out as well. He'll join us in less than 5 minutes, and we'll look at, of course, the SEC football race this year. Alabama, you like Georgia.
Yeah, I think the Dogs this year with JT Daniels have got a great chance. Bryce Young is going to be a terrific quarterback, but still some question marks. If you look at Alabama, they have the second fewest returning starters on offense of any team in the FBS. So you've got a lot to replace and a ton of talent that was gone. I get it's Alabama, you reload. But here's the thing I always ask people. If that's the case, then why have they not won the national title the last 12 years? Why have they not won the SEC 12 consecutive years? It's not as simplistic as people make it out to be. I think it's just lazy when people go pick Alabama. Well, no, because the reality of it is they're too much of just chumps to go down and throw down money on other teams and actually step out and make a play on somebody that they actually believe can win the league. Alabama's going to be a great team. I'm not taking anything away from them. They had a historically great team last year. But when you sit there and you lose Waddle, you lose six guys in the first round of the draft, you're going to have a little bit of a drop-off. Doesn't mean they can't win the league again, but I think Georgia's in great position this year. The Gators are down in the SEC East. I don't know if Tennessee's still playing football or not in Knoxville. The rest of the league, you know, Kentucky, they'll average their 14 points a game and try and hold you to 13. What else is the rest of the league doing? Vandy still playing?
Yeah, Vandy's still playing.
Okay.
Amal, we talked baseball the entire hour with Josh Towers while you were gone yesterday. The story of these bullpens continued last night. Huge series at Fenway. Yankees trying to get back in this race in the AL East. They lead 3-1 in a rain-delayed game, going to the bottom of the ninth. They blow a two-run lead in the bottom of the ninth, score a run in the top of the ninth, and then four wild pitches bottom of the tenth and blow it. Red Sox win the game. Yankees now 8 games back. I thought in a big game for the Indians, or the Guardians, as they're going to be called now, they led the Rays the entire way. Cal Quantrill pitched great. They blow a 4-1 lead in that game and lose to the Rays 5-4-10. And then Kenley Jensen, for the second time in 3 nights, blows a 2-run lead in the ninth inning. And the Giants take 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers.
Yeah, I thought that loss last night was catastrophic for the Giants. For the Dodgers to lose that game. But if you saw the play last night with a full count, bases loaded, Dodgers up 3-2, Darren Ruff at the plate, he went around on a third strike, should have been an out and an end of the game. Instead, the tying run comes in, then they get a base hit, and they win the game 5-3. Tough loss if you're a Dodger backer or a Dodger fan. I still think the Dodgers are going to be right there, but the Giants now, you really have to consider them to win the division. I can't believe they're still a plus price.
They were plus 310, and Josh and I talked about this yesterday. Don't you have to at least take them at plus 310 in that spot? With if you win the game, you're up 4 here. I mean, we've only got 9 weeks left.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I'm trying to see how many games they have left with each other. They play 3 in AT&T, and I think they'll probably close out at the end of the year, and then they've got 3 more up there. So they've got 6 games remaining against the Giants head-to-head.
Lost in that storyline, Walker Buehler was great again last night. Our pleasure to have joined the Nuts for the very first time. Tom Hart, who works for the SEC Network. He's worked for ESPN, various minor league baseball teams along the way. From Columbia, Missouri, a graduate of the University of Missouri at Columbia. Welcome in, Tom.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
We're terrific, and we're excited to have you. I want to start out with the news of Texas and Oklahoma apparently going to join the SEC. In your opinion, how does this change the landscape in that conference?
Well, it changes the landscape in collegiate sports from coast to coast. It's not just the SEC. It puts a sense of urgency on the table for the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big Ten to add immediately or be left behind. This was the nuclear option for collegiate sports, Oklahoma, and more importantly, Texas, because of their brand and their reach. And quite frankly, it surprised a lot of people, except for the three parties that were working on it, Texas, Oklahoma, and the SEC office. And now it's put the other conferences in a position where they have to play catch up, and they're trying to catch up with the strongest power in the room. That's a long way to go, even if you're somebody as well respected and funded as the Big Ten.
Tom, what do you think these leagues do moving forward? I mean, I know it's a shot in the dark, but just based on the fact that you've been around collegiate sports a long time, what would you speculate happens, or where do you see this impacting collegiate sports moving forward?
Well, I think Notre Dame is the next domino to fall, or at least the biggest domino that everybody's chasing. They already have a relationship with the ACC. The ACC did them a huge favor by allowing them to, you know, park on their tarmac last season. That's how they got into the college football playoff. But the Big Ten should be as heavily after Notre Dame as the ACC is. Whether or not they can make that happen remains to be seen. And then, to me, the biggest question is, does the Pac-12 have enough cachet to get teams to come to them that will be relevant? You know, to get to 16, to make those moves without a great media rights deal in their back pocket, do they have something to offer those middle of the pack teams that will be left over? And those schools are everybody from, you know, Kansas and Oklahoma State to Texas Tech and whatever is left over after the Big 12 is picked apart. So that's going to be the end result is everyone's going to grow. It's just a matter of, you know, who's getting the best protein to grow between now and once this carousel stops spinning.
Tom Hart works for the SEC Network. You can find him on Twitter at @Tom_Hart. Baseball, basketball, football. Tom, let's take a look at the race in the football this year. My partner, Amal Shaw, very high on the Georgia Bulldogs. Think they have a legitimate shot to win the SEC and make the college football playoff. Alabama's still the favorite, and Jimbo sits there in Texas A&M looking for another title. How does the race shape up to you?
Yeah, those are the three teams. Those are the three elite teams. Obviously, the West is going to be much stronger than the East. I think even casual observers can just glance down and see that. Florida will take at least a half step back this year, and they're therefore all winnable games for Georgia, which is not only why I like them to be a college football playoff participant, but, you know, knock on wood, to get there healthy, because they don't have grind out games week after week. They've got Clemson to start the season. Quite frankly, even though my bosses with ESPN are not going to be happy with me saying this, I don't think that's a must-win game for either Georgia or Clemson. I don't see that game having much weight. Yeah, it takes away the ability to have any wiggle room to suffer a loss the rest of the way for each of those teams, or at least more so for Georgia. But their schedules after that opener are pretty pedestrian. So where that game is on the schedule and what they have in front of them, I think it'll be a highly entertaining game. Everybody's going to want to watch it. I just don't see that being impactful in the national championship race, although it will have an impact on seeding. And the rest of the way for Georgia should be relatively simple. They have a quarterback now that they believe can run the system. They have an embarrassing amount of depth and strength in their backfield. Same thing at wide receiver, although a lot of those guys are coming back healthy. They have multiple tight ends, including LSU transfer Eric Gilbert, who, if he is healthy and if he is eligible, will be one of the best tight ends in the country, which is what we saw from him at LSU a couple of years ago. And they're in great position. Alabama is Alabama. They're going to reload as much talent as they lost. They have another wave coming in. Texas A&M is fascinating to me because they've got big defensive backs. They've got guys who can cover a lot of ground. They got a nice Williams at a slot/running back position. They have a great tight end in Jalen Weidermeyer. And even though they don't have an established quarterback, Jimbo is an established quarterback developer. So that's why those three will be favorites, not just within the league, but obviously in the national championship race.
Hey, Britton, just make sure you save that recording from 11-11-11-13 so I can play it for Mike the rest of the year. Thank you so much for that testimony about Georgia. I've been trying to tell Mike all year Georgia's going to be there. You mentioned Texas A&M. Kellen Mond finally decided to take his pension and retire after 13 years at A&M. What do you think, or who do you think steps up and leads this team? Because if you look everywhere else, you look at in terms of the tailback position, you look at this team from a defensive line standpoint, this team is right up there among the best in the SEC. And Jimbo's got all the pieces in place. And by the way, the guys from the Crimson Tide come to College Station this year.
Yeah, and that game's going to be the game of the year in college football, at least to start things out when Alabama goes there October 9th. That'll be a night game at Kyle Field, and it's going to be absolutely nuts. The way I view this program as a whole, they were really upset that they lost that fourth slot to Notre Dame in the college football playoff. The fans, the people in the football building, but quite frankly, neither Notre Dame or Texas A&M was at the same level as the three teams in front of them last year. It is what it is. No matter how big the playoff is, there's always going to be somebody who feels left out. There's also going to be somebody in the back end who's in who's not quite up to snuff with those at the top end. So the bottom line is A&M under Jimbo has always been building to this year. this is the year where the, you know, the bonds come due, so to speak. You mentioned the strength that they have on the defensive line. Mike Elko is an elite defensive coordinator. They are replacing some guys up front on that O-line, but that's not really an issue for Texas A&M, at least it hasn't proven to be. So it looks like Haynes King will probably be the starting quarterback. He's got more versatility and mobility than what Kellen Mond had. And I think that was evident a couple of years ago when they had Clemson early in the season and Mond couldn't get rid of the ball, couldn't throw it away, ends up getting sacked, I think it was six times. I don't think that happens to Haynes King. And they've got a little bit of depth with Zach Calzada there. And listen, Jimbo can take mediocre quarterbacks and make them great. He can take great quarterbacks and make them elite. I just think that they were with Mond, there was a ceiling with that program. You know, he was a good quarterback that they made really good. It just wasn't good enough to beat elite teams in the league. So I don't think that's an issue for them going forward, especially with the talent that they have, not just at the wide receiver position, but able to move those guys around. And Jimbo has sneakily been a great tight ends coach since he's gotten to Texas A&M. And Jalen Weidermeyer is the guy that they can use to get mismatches, especially when he's detached from the line of scrimmage. They throw him out there in the slot or even further. And if he doesn't have the mismatch, then he's got a slot receiver matched up with a linebacker who does have the mismatch. And that makes A&M really, really dangerous. It's a team that only lost one game last year, guys. I mean, granted, they weren't in that game. But only one loss in 10 games last season, and then took care of North Carolina handily in the Orange Bowl.
Tom, so let's draw a line. There's those top three teams, and there's a drop-off. From a betting perspective, here's a plus-price bet I like. LSU's season win total is 8. You can get plus 120 if you go under 8. I think that West Division is tough. I'm not sure where LSU finds 9 wins to beat you on this bet.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you and I can agree to disagree on this one. I love LSU this year. They're returning 19 of 22 starters from the last two games of the season. Both of those were wins. They were more COVID impacted, I think, than a lot of the elite teams. They were going to take a step back after arguably the best year in college football, regardless, because of all the talent they lost and losing Joe Burrow. But they didn't have – they were a 500 team playing only SEC games, and they didn't have any non-conference games to make you look at them and go – ah, you know, 8-5, not that bad a year for what they accomplished the year before. So you look back to the last four games of the season, 2-2, lost to A&M 20-7, lost to Alabama in a game that was a one-score game in the second half. Alabama kept their starters in the whole game. Then they beat Florida and Ole Miss. Brennan is good. Max Johnson is who I think is going to end up getting that job. And they're bringing in Mike Jones, a Clemson transfer, to make a difference on defense. Jay Ward moves over to safety. I don't know. I think the biggest mistake that Ed Orgeron was forced into making going into last year was when he was forced to hire Bo Pelini. The defense was a train wreck from game one when Mississippi State threw for something like 700 gajillion yards against him, and he refused to get out of his man defense and do anything different, even at the half. I think LSU has slept on. I think they're overlooked. I believe in Ed Orgeron and his ability when it's his decision, and I don't think it was before, to put together a staff. I would say that, yes, they play in the toughest division, and there's going to be, you know, swing games against the likes of, say, Florida, on the road to Ole Miss, and that's it. But I think the most pivotal game is UCLA week one. And to me, it smells a lot like the Miami game from 2018 that everybody said the same thing. They won that one by, I think it was 17. Miami got a garbage touchdown late, and that was where everyone kind of went, huh, maybe we overestimated Miami and maybe we underestimated LSU.
Love the assessment there. LSU, 5 starters back on the offensive line. Best secondary tandem there with Ricks and Stingley. I want to ask you very quickly to appease the 7 people in the state of Alabama that cheer for War Eagle. Brian Harsin comes down there from Idaho. I don't get this move, but if you're the Auburn, I was going to say front office, but if you're the Auburn athletic department.
Well, they wanted to get an established head coach. They wanted to take away the, let's just put it, the booster impact and the local impact with people who don't know football as well, trying to make a football decision. I think they got a good head coach. I don't know if he's a great head coach, and we don't know that yet. And I think this is going to be a really tough year to judge him because they're going to be in a program of transition. They're just okay at the quarterback position, kind of like the Mon thing we talked about before. They're kind of stuck with the guy that they have until somebody comes in and beats Bo Nix out. But what they do have is they have an incredible talent at running back in Tank Bigsby, over 1,200 all-purpose yards last year, led all freshmen in the country with better than 6 yards per carry, 900-plus yards from scrimmage. Bigsby is a beast. I think eventually Harsin wants to be like a, you know, kind of an up-tempo, prolific offense. They're going to be more of a running threat this year and probably lower scoring than what they end up being.
Hey, Tom, I know I'm putting you on the spot. Any chance you can stick around for one more segment after the break?
Yeah, sure.
Terrific. We might even talk about some of the sports other than football in the SEC.
By the way, Tom, this is the problem with being a great guest. You get asked to stick around extra with us.
All right, folks.
Hey,
when
it's like Carson sitting you to the couch.
When we come back, more Tom Hart.
It's time to put on your lucky pair of Crocs and channel your inner fortune teller, because your prediction might just make you $10,000 richer. The Crocs Hoops Draft Prediction Challenge is coming, and dare we say, free to play on DraftKings.com. If the odds are in your favor, 10 G's could be yours. Learn more at DraftKings.com/Crocs.
Welcome back into the Nets. I'm Mike Palm. He's Amal Shah. A lot of thanks here to Tom Hart sticking around from the SEC Network to continue talking all things SEC. My boss, Derek Stevens, and I are huge college baseball junkies. We believe that the regional weekend, not the super region, but the regional weekend will become a huge deal, almost as much as the college basketball tournament took off. It's just so terrific, and there's nothing better than SEC baseball. I want to talk to you about two pitchers. One, how good is Jack Leiter, and how good will he be as a pro? And then talk about Will Bednar at Mississippi State. This kid impressed me so much this year.
This is a great conversation. This is right up my alley. First of all, Leiter, I had the chance to call his no-hitter against South Carolina. He is what you would expect the son of a longtime major leaguer to be. He is unflappable. He is well-refined. But what sets him apart than a lot of big-time baseball prospects is when he came out of high school in New Jersey, he wasn't a big strapping lad that had innings promised to him. In fact, when Al Leiter talked with Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt head coach, about possibilities, Corbin said straight up, hey, listen, if you're afraid he's not going to pitch and get his innings, you're not going to offend me if he goes somewhere else. So when Leiter essentially committed, it was based on, you know, projecting that he's going to be good enough to be a starter and be in the Vanderbilt rotation. But there was nothing guaranteed. And then he turns into this, you know, half of one of the best duos we've seen in college baseball. He lives off his fastball. His breaking ball is really good. But obviously, to be successful in the big leagues, you've got to locate that fastball, and it's, you know, at its best, it's 96, 97, 98, and that guy's only going to get bigger and stronger as the days go on. And so with that, I think is going to come even more velocity. Bednar is similar in a way, although he's a much bigger guy, big right-hander from Pennsylvania, grew up a Pirates fan, and his brother pitching for the Pirates. He's a competitor. He's a grinder. He's part of a championship program, obviously, at Mississippi State. And, you know, I've had guys tell me year after year, talking with big league guys who came from the SEC, that, listen, what prepared me for Major League Baseball was pitching on a Friday night in the SEC, a Friday night at LSU, a Friday night at Mississippi State, you know, with 12,000 people there where the game and the result matters to those people. As opposed to, you know, pitching in the Sally League on a Friday night in Asheville, where they're just there for the quarter draws and the pre-tie-dye t-shirt. That's a huge difference in development, and Major League Baseball has admitted as much, that leaving the development to the elite college teams is a much, much better investment than trying to develop these guys in the minors.
You called the football for the Ramblin' Wreck at Georgia Tech. I'm a big Paul Johnson guy. I love the triple option. Their win total is 4.5 this year, Tom. I argue, and Jeff Collins is a terrific coach, to switch from a triple option to go to a pro-style offense will take you the better part of half a decade to do that. Any thoughts on the win total at Georgia Tech, 4.5?
Wow. I agree with you. I think you're changing a lot of different things when you make that change from triple option to what Jeff Collins wants to do. There are some winnable games for him early. Northern Illinois and Kennesaw should be winnable. And then you get into Clemson, Carolina. Oof, you know, that's not an easy schedule. I think Boston College is going to be better than a lot of people suspect. Georgia's obviously not a winnable game. They haven't won that game since, well, for a long time. They got one when Paul stole one from them maybe 7 years ago. I might be off by that. No, I like the under there with Georgia Tech. It's Jeff Collins has them pulling in the right direction, and he's got the right energy around the program. But you're talking about a total roster overhaul, which is not easy in the ACC, and it's certainly not easy with some of the academic requirements that Georgia Tech has as an engineering school.
Who do you have for national champion in college football today?
You know, I am really leaning Texas A&M. But I can't go away from Alabama. So to me, it's Alabama until someone takes it away from Nick Saban, and that's not easy to do.
I apologize, Tom. We're up against it, but I think we had some audio difficulties there. Did he say Texas A&M?
I'm leaning.
That's fair enough. I give you credit.
Tom, we really appreciate the time. Can't wait to have you back on.
All right, fellas. Be good.
Thank you.
When we come back, the Palm Reader Playbook, and I'm all in. The VSiN football betting guides are coming soon, and there is no better way to prepare for both the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and the player awards. Each guide is only $20, and discounts are available when you buy both. Now is the time to reserve your copy, but let's be honest here. Just sign up for our all-access package. You get everything. Point spread weekly. You get on-demand. You can go back and watch the shows anytime you want. You get all the stats. You get the parlay calculator. Those are hard to come by. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe.
By the way, Kansas, the Jayhawks, to win the Big 12 might be looking a little bit better this year in football now that we could have a departure of OU in Texas. I know they're not leaving during the 2021 season. But
no, they're not leaving.
I just wanted to make those people who picked the Kansas City Royals to win the division feel a little bit better about themselves. Well, but they're not out of it.
Let's go to the playbook because I'm going to go against the Royals today. I'm going to ride my Tigers. Let's go, baby.
On fire.
Wandy Peralta again. Well, we're going to find out tonight because here's what I'm doing. I'm trying to see if this series at Comerica was for real. Are the Tigers that good, and are the Rangers that bad? I mean, they did rally a bit yesterday, the Rangers, to score 5 runs in total. I'm going to take the Tigers, Kansas City tonight. They've won 7 in a row. They won 9 in a row at home at Comerica. Now they go on the road to face many people at VSiN's pick to win the AL Central, the Kansas City Royals.
Who are these people?
I'll get those betting guides. I'll take the Tigers and Wandy Peralta +108 tonight for 1 unit, and then I'm going to fade the Rangers, Odorizzi, and the Astros. That's a solid lineup. I'll lay the run and a half at home, -105. Gold Cup parlay. Qatar, I repeat, Qatar, Mexico, and USA. 3-team parlay. That's all 3 ways. They need to win in regulation.
Who's Qatar taking on?
Honduras, I believe.
I think Mexico's going to win CONCACAF.
They're the best team, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the best team. I think they should be able to win. The U.S. right now, not quite as good as we've seen in years past. Qatar actually taking on El Salvador, and then Mexico against Honduras. and the United States taking on the Reggae Boys in Jamaica. So that should be an interesting one. Costa Rica, Canada should be a pretty good matchup there on Sunday.
I stayed away from that game. I don't have a real lean there.
By the way, I was a little bit more impressed with the Canadian side than I anticipated when they played.
Against the U.S.?
Yeah, I did not expect them to be as competitive as they were, but they did a nice job there. Should be a lot of fun this weekend. Not much else going on. I don't have any plays today. Getting ready for college football. I can't wait. I'm going to have a ton of plays. We'll be listing them as we get into August. This is going to be a great college football season. You're going to see a lot of the stadiums filled. And, you know, I like Tom's pick on Texas A&M in terms of potentially winning a national championship. I think it's a little bit of a long shot, but I don't think if you're looking for a dark horse, I know a lot of people like these teams that are 20-1 or 25, 30-1. I think that's the team you have to eye.
I still think when you're looking at the playoff, the national championship, SEC is so tough. I think you got to start penciling in Ohio State and evaluating where they are every year.
Well, the problem is right now, when you look at the rest of the Big Ten, it's turning somewhat into the ACC. You've got now the upper echelon is better than the top of the ACC, but it's Clemson, it's Ohio State. I'd say the league to me that's going to be really intriguing this year, obviously the Big 12. I told you Iowa State and Oklahoma are going to be two teams right there, but the Pac-12. Arizona State, Jaden Daniels, keep an eye on him for that team. You would look at USC and what they're going to be able to do. Big year for Clay Helton. They went 5-1 last year in a shortened season. And then Oregon. I think Kayvon Thibodeau is the best player, regardless of position in college football. I think he could have a Chase Young type of season for the Oregon Ducks and have a monster year. I want to see how Washington does. That's a team that I always kind of root for. I want to see what Jimmy Lake's program is able to do. But Pac-12, always fairly fun to watch because it's competitive. You don't have a team that's really just an Alabama or a Clemson against the rest of the league.
Britton, our producer, has created a new segment when we close today, and we're going to talk about some of these teams, over or out. Are they going to go over their win total, or is the coach going to be out at the end of the year? I'm dying to get your takes on some of these.
I'm going to tell you what he told me about. I love the segment. By the way, sneaky, people don't know. Britton knows a hell of a lot about sports betting. He's very analytical.
Betting, keyword
betting.
Sports betting.
Yeah, you know, you got to bet, right?
Well, the network has something to do with it. Let's take a look at a couple of baseball games here today before this gets away from us. Braves, Phillies, big series this weekend in the NL East. You liked the over yesterday when we talked on the phone. It got there. Morton pitched well, but it got there. Braves knocked the ball around a little bit. Different story today. They get Zach Wheeler, who has been dominant against them in Philadelphia. $1.50 you can find him at, up to $1.55 at DraftKings. Low total here, 7.5, opposed by Max Fried. Two games for Wheeler this year at home against the Braves. He went 7 innings, he went 8 innings. Didn't allow a run either time. 22 strikeouts against no walks.
Yeah, he's been dominant against this team. Mike, my only concern in this matchup is that Wheeler, in two of his last three starts, has given up, his last two starts has given up 4 runs in each start. That's the one area of concern that I have with him. I'm telling you, I'm a big Zach Wheeler fan. When he's on his game, his stuff is as good as Jacob deGrom, Max Scherzer, or anyone else you deem to be up there. I do like this. What's the price you're getting right now?
I got earlier today, 148.
That's a pretty good number there. Watch out for the Phillies. This team's going to be dangerous. I think they've got a chance to catch the Mets and pass them potentially. Mets did acquire Rich Hill today from the Tampa Bay Rays.
That's a head-scratcher to me.
It is for me for both sides.
I don't know what the Mets need somebody down the stretch to get them there, I think.
Yeah.
And the Rays needed somebody to start in the playoffs, which I think Rich Hill provides that start in the playoffs more than he does innings down the stretch.
I tend to agree with you. The experience, what is he, 37, 38 years old? I'm a little bit surprised by this move.
I was shocked by the move. Good move by the Rays, though, getting Nelson Cruz. They stole
That's
him.
Huge.
I thought he was going to hell.
Nelson Cruz getting to the middle of that lineup changes the dynamic of who the Tampa Bay Rays are. This team, you know, when you look at Randy
Rosarena.
Thank you. I always mispronounce his name. You know, he's a guy that can give you power, but he's at the top of the lineup. You put in a guy like Nelly Cruz in the middle of that lineup, Mike, not only that, he improves guys batting in 3 and 5 behind him because he's going to take a walk. But when you give him a pitch, this guy might, you know, he might put it in out of there. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Josh Towers texted me yesterday when that news came down, and he said, and also don't forget, unbelievable clubhouse guy. Nelson Cruz. So that fits with what Rich Hollendorfer told us about emotional, mental makeup. That's who they focus on in Tampa. But let's talk about the Rays. They're in Cleveland. I guess, is this an insurance thing now? It's Progressive Field, and now they're going to be called the Guardians? I mean, a lot of insurance theme here to the Indians.
That's why our rates are so high in Nevada.
Plesac goes against Fleming tonight. I thought terrible loss last night for the Indians. They were in control all the way. The bullpen blows it. They lose 5-4 in 10. Shaw takes the loss. You get Josh Fleming for Tampa Bay here today, who's really taking a spot in the rotation. He pitched 2 2/3 innings in one of those doubleheader 7-inning games on July 7th in Tampa Bay against the Indians. Only gave up 1 hit, did not allow a run. Plesac on the DL for 6 weeks. This is his third start off the layoff. They've been stretching him out 4 innings, 6 innings. Expect him to go longer here. And the Indians have won 6 of Plesac's last 8 starts. We see the Rays actually a small road favorite here tonight.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think Fleming, when you look at his numbers, forget the fact that his ERA is under 4, but I'm impressed with his whip. That's another thing that's a contributing factor. But this team with Tampa, so dangerous. I like them. The Indians, you know, it's shocking that they're still 2 games over 500 because they've been highly inconsistent, particularly from an offensive standpoint. I don't have a play on this one, but this is one where I'm not surprised the Rays are
slight
favorites.
Quick take, Yankees-Red Sox tonight. You get Cole as a slight dog on the road. You're interested?
I would be interested in Cole, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He pitched very well against them at home. Did not so well in Boston the last time out. As we said, we're going to play this new game, over or out, focused on college football when we come back on the Nuts.
With exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boost, and the largest offer of live in-play options, BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Michigan, 1-800-270-7117. Virginia, 1-888-532-3500. In Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF.
Welcome back into the Nuts. I'm Mike Palm. He is Amal Shaw. Very excited for this segment. We kind of previewed with Tom Hart a little bit, especially Ed Orgeron, the LSU, who he's higher on than I am, but he made some great arguments. Let's start with USC. You mentioned USC last segment. A lot of people scratching their heads at the Clay Helton contract extension. They are the favorite in the South, in the Pac-12. Over-under wins 8.5. Or is Clay Helton out at the end of the season? We're going to do that with each of these teams. Do they exceed their win total, or is the coach going to be out?
Well, I think the Trojans exceed their win total. I think they get to 9 at least. I think USC is in a good position to have a very solid year. But, you know, your USC, the reality of it is nobody wants to come out and say it. You're looking for a national championship. In terms of the Trojans, though, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a feasible option this year. I don't think he's going to be gone. They've had a tremendous recruiting class. They get Corey Foreman, a kid out of Southern California, number one recruit according to some services, was supposed to go to Clemson. He had committed to Clemson, decommits, and winds up at SC. So they're trending in the right direction. When you look at the schedule, San Jose State, Stanford openers at home, and then at Wazoo, Oregon State at Colorado. Utah is going to be a challenging game, but it'll be tough when the Utes come there. I think, Mike, they got a chance. When you look at the schedule, I'm curious as to how BYU shakes out because that's their season finale, but they should have a really good year. They should be over 9 wins.
Well, Yogi Bernstein says that they have a shot to make the college football playoff because their out-of-conference schedule is pretty solid this year.
Yeah, BYU, San Jose State, who had a terrific had a terrific year, and then, of course, Notre Dame.
Mountain West.
I don't know if they can win in South Bend, though.
Yeah,
that's the question.
What would you make that line right now in that game? Notre Dame up 3 or 4?
Yeah, I was going to say probably 5 or 6.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, Notre Dame a 10-point favorite, I think, when they open at Tallahassee at Doak Walker. To open the season. I'm going to ask you this question before we get to LSU. If you're a USC fan or if you're a USC administrator, do you regret not signing Coach O when he had the interim tag there, or do you think it was best to go with Clay Helton and let Coach O go back to LSU?
Well, I don't think Clay Helton was necessarily the best option, but I don't necessarily think it was a bad move to let Ed Orgeron walk. I get he won a national championship at LSU, but let's be real here. Gene Chizik won a national title at Auburn, and they were happy to escort him out. The reality of it is you had once a generation type of offense and you had the right signal caller. You had Joe Burrow, who was a historically great quarterback, Ja'Marr Chase and Jefferson. Look at Jefferson, what he did in the NFL as a rookie. Ja'Marr Chase, a top 5 pick, only played 2 years at LSU. That tells you how talented this team was. So I don't necessarily think it was a bad move. I just don't know if they made the right hire in Clay Helton.
All right.
I think he's around, by the way, into 2022 for USC.
Season win total. We just talked about this with Tom Hart. It's 8, but it's heavily juiced to the over, minus 140. I wanted to make the argument for the plus price at under because it takes 9 to beat you. You were looking into their schedule as Tom was talking. You like it over 8 wins here.
I do. When you look at their schedule, the UCLA game is going to be a critical game. I think they can win this game on the road at the Rose Bowl. But more importantly, you look at their McNeese State and Central Michigan home. There'll be wins at Mississippi State. They will be far better than they were last year when they were embarrassed defensively. They have Auburn as a winnable game at home at Kentucky. Florida is not the same. That's a rivalry game that they have in terms of the divisions, but they'll be able to beat the Gators at home at Ole Miss. Look, Matt Corral's back. I think that offense will be explosive, but until the lane train finds a defense, still a lot of question marks for Ole Miss. But I think when you look at the schedule, Mike, at Alabama, Texas A&M at home in the last game of the regular season, realistically, this team, if things break right, worst case scenario, they're 8-4. Best case scenario, 10-2.
So you would play the over.
I would.
But you don't think they're losing five games.
I don't think they're losing five games. That's the thing. I don't think you're getting beat. You're going to have to use the 8 as a push number. And Edo will be back in 2022 unless this team went 4-8 or 3-9.
All right. We're going to have to ask you to put your objectivity cap on here and talk about Jim Harbaugh and Michigan. Will Michigan go over 7.5 wins, or is Harbaugh out as coach?
You know, I think it might be just a mutual agreement to part. But why do you say that? I actually think Harbaugh is a terrific coach.
The results don't say that at Michigan.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't disagree with you, but there's a couple of factors in there that are being overlooked. First of all, Michigan wants to think they're greater than they really are. And you tell me any other team in any other sport that wins half a national title in 70-plus years and gets this kind of cachet. We're going into year 73 that they won one national title, split in 97 with Nebraska. You think if the San Francisco 49ers won one in 73 Super Bowls, we'd be talking about how great that team has been, or the Dallas Cowboys, if they won one time in 73 years.
Dallas is getting close now. I mean, they haven't.
They're getting there, but they at least they won five times, yeah. You know, previous to that. But what my point is, I still think when you look at Harbaugh as a coach and his record, he did a great job at San Diego, did a terrific job at Stanford. You know, he beat USC on the road when they had those great teams. Did a terrific job with the 49ers. I just think that Michigan's a bit of a challenge. I don't think the problem is, when the program thinks they're better than they are, it hurts you. And we see a similar situation at Nebraska.
Can the program fire him, or are they going to have Jim Harbaugh leave? I mean, he's a Michigan man. I know there was a lot of support bringing him in. It's sort of waned, but does he get to really call his own terms there?
You know, I don't know about who kind of leads things there, who's the big power broker, but if you look at it real quickly, 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, 10-3, 9-4, 2-4 last year. And, you know, throw out 2020 for a lot of teams, a lot of things going on. They would have been 2-5 if they had played Ohio State. So that, to me, is an aberration. But, Mike, if you look at his record, aside from the fact that his name is Jim Harbaugh and it's at Michigan, most people would sign up for that anywhere, any other program.
Yeah. Let's switch to the ACC and go with Virginia Tech. Their win total, 7.5. Do they go over 7.5, or is Justin Fuente out as coach already?
I think Justin Fuente is in trouble. I think this team's in some trouble. You look at they've had several guys transfer this team defensively. I don't think they're going to be as good. You know, Justin Fuente was supposed to be an offensive guy. You combine him with Bud Foster before Foster retired. They were expected to trend in the right direction. They haven't done that yet. I just don't think Lane Stadium has the same cachet it once had. You go into Thursday night into Lane Stadium, you're coming out with an L. Now you're like, hey, sign us up for Virginia Tech Thursday night. That's not a bad road game we can win. I just don't think that program is heading in the right direction. And with him at the helm, they did get to an ACC championship game. But, Mike, they have not been able to really turn things around. You look at, they got off to a fast start. They go 10-4, 9-4, 6-7, 8-5, 5-6. No, thank you.
UCLA, the Chipper. Is UCLA go over 7 wins, or is Chip Kelly out as coach?
I think they go over 7 wins. DTR back under center. They've got a ton of guys back. This is a good year for the Bruins. I will say one thing. I would have to look at the economics of his contract because, remember, UCLA is a public institution. Some of these things, unless you're getting money from donors, sometimes can be a bit precarious when you're making a coaching decision. Auburn said, hey, we need to compete with Alabama. Let's come up with the money and get rid of Gus Malzahn. I don't think they necessarily – I think they got Gus Malzahn 2.0 and Brian Harsin, by the way. So I think if you're UCLA, I don't know if you're necessarily quick to get rid of Chip Kelly. He just has not necessarily been able to recruit at the same level. And remember, UCLA has very stringent academic restrictions for athletes. It's not as simplistic as some of the other programs where you have a pulse, we'll take you. You actually have to be able to speak.
The problem is when you're a coach that's completely one-sided like he is on the offensive side of the ball, you've got to hire a defensive coordinator.
I agree with you. I loved your suggestion of someone like a Rocky Long or, you know, Mike Elko down to Texas A&M. I mean, obviously he left Notre Dame, so I don't think he would have left the SEC, but I get your point of bringing in a name that can make a difference.
This is an interesting one in a program I followed. Growing up, I was a huge Tom Osborne fan and loved Nebraska football. Does Nebraska go over 6.5 wins, or is Scott Frost out as coach?
He's starting to defrost as we speak, and I think it's time for them to make a change. This program has not gone in the right direction. Their quarterback play has been inconsistent. They've just not looked good. You know, one week they'll look good, they'll play well against somebody, and then they get their doors blown off by somebody else. It's amazing to me how inconsistent the Huskers have been. I think the Scott Frost experiment has not gone particularly well. Trev Alberts in as the new AD there. I think we could see a change. Any athletic director, when you've got a coach who's just basically toiling in mediocrity, you're going to want to make a change. Here's the problem, Mike. They don't recruit the same way that they used to.
Because they don't play in Texas anymore. It was a bad move for them. Once the Texas and they combined and it became the Big 12, you know, and then they go to the Big 10, they lost that Texas base. I think that hurts them a lot.
It really does impact them. And to me, I just don't think they'll be able to recover. But here's the thing. Ohio State doesn't play in Texas and they get studs out of there. I think Nebraska, one of the things that they have to realize, their brand and their name is not what it was 25 years ago. You know, when you look at kids from a recruiting standpoint, it's a six-year window. Too many people go, well, Nebraska was great in the 90s. They had one of the greatest runs in the history of college football, 94, 95, and 97. But it's just not that same program anymore. It's time for them to make a change and get out of the entire, you know, Tom Osborne regime. You know, you had Frank Solich, you brought in Bo Pelini, Bill Callahan. It's time to go get somebody outside the box that's willing to come there.
9 wins a year wasn't good enough for Frank Solich. And by the way, he retired from Ohio. Was very successful there with that Ohio program. Made them relevant in the MAC again. But 9-3 wasn't good enough for Solich. I thought Callahan destroyed the program by making it pass happy 70%. It lost its identity. When we think of Nebraska, though, we think of, you know, you think of Mike Rozier and you think of Lawrence Phillips and Tommy Frazier and those offensive lines. It was the black shirts on defense that made that program for 30 years, and they haven't had it. This team gives up 28 points a game. You can't do that at Nebraska.
I would agree with you, but I would also say that offensive line, you got Remington Award winners there, you know, Dean Steinkuhler. You look at some of the great players that they've had there, the running game. I'm on Green. I mean, these guys just had a plethora of talent.
The 83 Huskers were the greatest team ever that didn't win the national title. And I still say that's the best game, the 84 Rose Bowl of all time.
Ooh. You mean Orange Bowl?
Orange Bowl, sorry.
Yeah,
when he went for two.
I would argue there's a few teams I would say in terms of best not to win a national title. 2002 Miami Hurricanes. 2015 Ohio State Buckeyes. Alabama from a few years ago. I forgot what year it was. I thought they had a team. I'm trying to think of who else was there. A couple other teams I'm sure I'm overlooking.
Let's get to what everybody wants to talk about. Everybody that works in journalism went to Syracuse. Do the Orange go over 3 wins, or is your guy Dino Babers out?
I don't know if they go over 3 wins, but he's gone. It's time to make a coaching change there. You're not going anywhere fast with Dino Babers. You look at this team. They went from 10 wins down to 5-1. It's time for a change.
I agree with you there. The bloom is off the rose there in Superior Hill.
Forget that. It's already dead and buried.
Good luck this weekend with all your wagers. Full weekend of baseball, golf. We got CONCACAF, the Gold Cup here. Should be exciting. Stay tuned to VSiN up next. Betting Across America with Mike Pritchard and James Salinas.